Hello, everybody, and happy Sunday. We're continuing to make our way through the book of Luke again today. And today we find ourselves in Luke chapter 11 and chapter 12. And you know I love me a good title for a message. And today's title is A Good Eye. Horrify why in a minute. Let's start with a good eye. Sometimes people use very unusual phrases, especially from other countries, to describe a situation. If you have any British friends, they might have used one of the following. The first one is, Bob's your uncle. King, well, you go down three blocks, take a left, and then the Burger King will be on the first driveway on the right, and then Bob's your uncle. And you're going, Bob's not my uncle. My uncle is Alan. I don't know what you're talking about. But Bob's your uncle is just a phrase that means it's all good, it's all finished, it's all done. Like, well, you know, William popped their clogs. And you're going, pop their clogs? You don't wear clogs that much in England, do you? Pop their clogs means that person sadly has passed away. And so they'll just say, well, William popped his clogs. He went on to the next life. I'm going, that's the weirdest way to say that particular phrase, but oh well, you... Well, in the latter part of Luke chapter 11, Jesus uses a rather odd phrase. Check it out. Let me read this for you. Your eye is the lamp of your body. When your eyes are healthy or good, your whole body is also full of light. But when they are unhealthy, of darkness. So Jesus talks about having a good eye in these verses. What is that about? It's actually really cool. In Jewish culture back then, your eye meant your attitudes towards others. So to have a good eye meant you were taking care of the poor that were around you. Having a bad eye meant you were blind to the needs of the poor and other people in general, and you were greedy and self-absorbed. This is not the only part of the Bible. A good and bad eye are mentioned all through the Bible. Book of Proverbs, a book of wisdom that we have. The generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. The phrase generous, literally translated in Hebrew, what it was written in, means a good eye. So a good eye, okay, will be blessed. And then look at Proverbs 28:22. The stingy awaits them, a poor life awaits them. The phrase the stingy, again, when it's literally translated, means to have a bad eye. So in the verses we read today, Jesus is saying that if you live your life with a good eye, it will be bright. In fact, one of the who's Jewish is to refer to them as Baal Tez Daha, which means a master of charity. If we're honest, though, with ourselves right here today, most of us struggle to have a good eye because advertisements are very clear that we need what they are selling, that our lives will be incomplete and empty unless we have their car or their gadget or their underwear or their Wonder Mop or whatever it is they're trying to pawn off on us. We can't give to others because we've spent all of our time on stuff. We are developing a bad eye if we live this way, if our lives are about getting and not giving and about self and not community. And you can tell when you get a bad eye because your life is instantly filled with a whole bunch. You have a bad eye. For example, let's say one of your friends comes up to you and says, oh my goodness, I got a raise and a promotion and it was big enough, I was finally able to buy my first new car. And then they show you the new car they got and you can feel the envy percolating inside of you because you're thinking your 20-year-old oil belching jalopy that I inherited from my weird uncle in South Dakota or whatever. And you look at them with this constipated face and your thought is, oh my goodness, I wish I had their life. And so you say something like, oh gee, it's so sad when envy envelopes you like that. When we live our lives with a good eye, it does lead to what Jesus talked about, a brighter existence, because we not only get the joy, the brightness of joy, of helping, of sharing in someone else's joy. It's such a great way to live. I want to give you two examples of people that lived with a good eye. The first one, if you ever go to Boston, they have a Holocaust museum there, and it's totally worth going. Story about a woman named Greta Wiseman Klein, and she unfortunately got put in a concentration camp when she was a young child during World War II, and she survived it just barely. She weighed 68 pounds when they rescued her. She just had withered down to nothing. It's a cool love story, though, because she ended up marrying one of the soldiers that rescued Klein, all right? But she tells a story of her best friend, her childhood friend, who was also in the concentration camp with her, a girl named Ilse. Seriously, Ilsa. And Ilsa one day was wandering around the concentration camp and she found a raspberry, a small plant with a single berry, but that was a treasure because you didn't get anything fancy like desserts or even fresh fruits. And she put it in her pocket all day, and then at that night, she put it on a leaf and gave it to Greta. She gave her, and Greta writes, imagine a world in which your entire possession is one raspberry and you give it to a friend. It's remarkable. And I thought about Ilsa and I thought, there's a person who is thinking of it. The second is from the medical field. My son was an ICU nurse and so was our youth pastor during COVID. Remember COVID? Good times, right? I'm really making your day right now, aren't I? Okay. Well, it was such a dark time, and it really was hard on nurses. My son had to see a lot of people die, of people, a shocking amount, and it really hurt him. He just wanted to have their family and friends go in there and be with them, and they couldn't. And it was the same all over the world, and two people in South America did something about it. They were nurses also, and they can't come in, but we don't want these people to suffer or die alone. And so they filled those latex gloves up with hot water and tied them at the ends, and then they would go into a patient's room, and they would place these warm hands on top of their hands and medically improve. Their symptoms dramatically improved. So they shared their findings with the rest of the world, and other countries of the world copy their behavior, and they called these hands the hands of God because it was so amazing to have that warmth of touch and so the elation anymore. There's two people that were living with a good eye. All right? Now let's move on to horrifying Jesus. This sounds like a really encouraging message. I'm hearing it right now, okay? But just trust me on this one. Look at Luke chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. It had gathered so that they were trampling on one another, which sounds like a heavy metal concert. Jesus began to speak first to his disciples, saying, "Be on guard against the yeast of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. There is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed, or hidden that will not be made known. That is sowed in the daylight, and what you have whispered in the ear of the inner rooms will be proclaimed from the roofs." All right, in these verses, Jesus is telling a group of his friends, don't trust the behavior of the Pharisees, who are the leaders of the religious establishment, more concerned about their image than they were about their character. So Jesus labeled them hypocrites. But then Jesus tells them something that is a little shocking. He says that one day, all hidden things are going to come out in the open. And a way is out of the book of Psalms in the Old Testament. You, God, have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. And this is from 1 Corinthians, the next verse. Let's pop that up there. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. So let's put this all together. God knows us fully. Even the parts of us that we're not proud of, even the parts of us we would rather keep hidden. I think I speak for all of us when I say, does it? At first you're thinking, oh no. It's a little scary for most of us to think about the fact that God knows everything, everything about us, even the stuff we would rather God didn't know. We are afraid in the world knows everything about us, it'll make him want to drink gin straight out of the cat dish, okay? And we probably have that fear, okay? But trust me, we don't have to freak out. Being fully known by God is actually a really good thing. One of my favorite authors, and but if you've not read her Substack or her books or her articles, there's an author named Kathleen Falsani. She was the religious editor and an author of the Chicago Sun-Times for years, and she's written several books boldly. It'll be a little aged. It was about 20 years old now, but it's fantastic. She writes about being fully known, and she's intensely vulnerable when she does. It's what I like about her. She just says it like it is. Listen to what she writes. I strive daily not to horrify Jesus. That's not perfect, far from it. I have a temper. I swear like an Irish lumberjack. I shout at other drivers. I sometimes drink vodka gimlets and make promises that I don't remember the next day. She has a degree from a religious seminary, too. Did I tell you that? I probably show more cleavage than I should. I've never followed a diet I didn't cheat on. I'm pretty sure I once got out of a Columbia House music subscription contract by telling the collector I had died. I am most assured. But then she writes these words, what I'll put on the screen. There is a freedom in being known. God sees me, the real me. All of me, all of the time. And even with all that data to go on, God still loves me. Ever do to make God love us less or more? That is just fantastic. And she's right. It is a glorious freedom to realize we're fully known by God. It means we can be honest with God like she was. It means the book of Matthew chapter 22. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. This means to love God with every part of us, even the unseemly parts. So don't you see, if we try to keep things hidden from God, the more things we keep dissipating in our relationship with God. So actually, to be fully known by God enables us to more fully know and experience God in the long run, because we don't have to pretend. There is a book written, I think, of things, and I know Brandy, a teacher at Thurston, she shares one awesome thing a week, I think, with her students. And it was a really good book. I'll share some of the things. It's just one guy just decided to be more grateful, and he just listed the things in his life he considered to be awesome. Line just before it gets super long. Is that not an awesome thing? And that happened to me 2 weeks ago. The smell of a campfire. Yeah, that's the only reason you go camping, isn't it, in the long run, is to smell the campfire. Number three, ugly. They're a beacon of hope to us all. I'm sorry, I liked that one. Number four, mall Santas with real beards. This is truly awesome. And my favorite, wearing underwear that's right out of the dryer. Oh, in the wintertime. That is just the best. I've actually put my ass just for that little awesome experience. But something goes on the top of my list of awesome things, and it's this. Being fully known and yet knowing that we're fully loved by God. That is an awesome. And last, let me talk about purpose. This is out of Luke 12. They left and found things just as Jesus had told them, so they prepared the Passover. When the hour came, Jesus and his apostles reclined at the table, and he said to them, I have eagerly desired to eat this. This is Luke 22. I am so sorry. That's the wrong chapter. The person put up the wrong chapter. Luke chapter 12, it's not your fault if you put up the wrong chapter. Luke chapter 12, I was just reading it too. I was just going along for the ride, and then I'm Luke chapter 12, Jesus is on this journey with his disciples and closest friends, and then a guy comes up to him and says, Jesus, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me. Evidently, he had an inheritance, and the brother was trying to take it all. That's Luke chapter 12. So this guy walks up to Jesus and asks him for a favor. He wants his brother to give him his part of the inheritance. And here's Jesus, when you read the verse for yourself, Jesus, the perfect embodiment of all that is good, the presence of the divine on earth, the epitome of grace and love, and asked him to do this favor. He says, oh man, that's not my job. You can read the verse for yourself. That's what it does. Here's Jesus, the presence of the divine on earth, and this guy asks him a favor, and he goes, oh, man. It's the same response you want to give to anybody that, oh, man, you just want to try to get out of it. That's how Jesus responds. But in the case of Jesus, he wasn't being selfish here. It wasn't a moment of non-Jesusness that he was going through. No. Jesus knew his purpose on earth was to be a Messiah, not a mediator. So by refusing to do this favor, Jesus was actually doing a good thing. He was guarding a very valuable resource, his own time, his own energy, his own life. That in a minute. But first, a little bit about circuits. Many of you have experienced this, or maybe some of you are experiencing it right now. You've lived in an older house, or maybe an apartment that's a little bit older, and the wiring's a little sketchy. So if you use the blow dryer, what that means is nobody else in the whole device, or you'll trip the breaker. So you know, some of you are nodding at me, and I know you know what I'm talking about right here. And it's just kind of a bummer. But I don't know about you. In the last few years, my life has felt a lot like a faulty electrical system. Seem to get tripped far too often, and maybe you can relate. The reason for this is simple. I don't believe we're wired to handle all of the information that comes our way these days on a daily basis, especially the news. Most of you or moral outrage, and too much of either one of those emotions will fry your emotional circuits in a hurry, and you can go through your weeks sometimes just feeling overwhelmed by your own life. And that's happened to me quite a bit in the last few years. Thing by an author named Susan Stable. What a great last name for somebody to write an article, okay? Susan Stable. She suggests, in order not to be overwhelmed, that we ask ourselves three questions on a regular basis. The first is, what's mine to do and what's not mine to do? The second is, what is mine to say? And the third is, what's mine to care about and what's not mine to care about? We can't solve all the world's problems all by our onesie. I tried earlier this summer. It didn't go well for me, okay? We'll fry our circuits if we try to. That she gives us are actually a recipe for peace. They help you discover the things you're supposed to be involved in order to partner with God in the repair of the world, to put the broken pieces of this world and people's lives back together. And then you can trust to do the things that you're not called to do. And that's when you can breathe easier. That's when the peace comes in. There's a phrase, I hope you can memorize this, that I love. I'll put it up on the screen. This day will happen to you unless you happen true. And it reminds us of something, that part of following Jesus is living with a clear sense of purpose. It's knowing when to say yes and knowing when to say no. And the difficult part is, we're going to have to say no to some things that are actually good things, like Jesus saying no to doing this guy's favor request. You really need to hear that phrase again, so I'll say it again. It's okay to say no. No can be our friend, okay? Just know that. I've learned that in my life. It's okay. No, instead of our day happening to us. A few quick announcements, and I'll send you out into the heat wave, okay? Let me pray for us first. God, please help all of us to live our lives with a good eye, to look out for others, not just ourselves. And God, thanks for the truth. You know us fully and you love us fully. What an awesome thing that is. And God, we know that you have good works planned for all of us to do. We get to partner with you in the repair of the world. It's such a privilege and joy. But please help us to know what is ours to do so we can rest in your non-anxious presence. Thank you, Lord. In your name we pray. Everyone said?